Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 205 event, which takes place in New York, New York. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 1-2 on our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 98 to lose 0.9 units overall. We also lost our half-unit bet on the Phil Davis by submission prop for Bellator 163. Back to the present, UFC 205 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a women's bantamweight contest between Liz Carmouche, who is 9-5, and Caitlin Shukagian, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Shukagian at -155, the comeback on Carmouche at +115, and the betting action right now at fivedimes.eu, our sponsored sportsbook, has Shukagian at -170, the comeback on Carmouche at +150. Action early on did come in on Shukagian. There is some action coming back on Carmouche as well, of course. There is going to be two-way action on this fight. I'm a little surprised people bid on Shukagian because I thought that Carmouche would get that a little bit more respect. I mean, she's been around the sport for a while, of course. She's fought the best of the best. She's an elite fighter, definitely in the women's bantamweight division, kind of always in the mix of a title shot. And Shukagian is more of the up-and-coming fighter. I mean, of course, obviously she had a pretty impressive win over Lauren Murphy in her UFC debut, and that says a lot right there because Murphy is no easy out at all. She was very impressive, and there was a lot of hype coming in to her debut with Shukagian as well. So it did carry over. A lot of people must have been impressed with what they saw, and she has a winnable fight here against Carmouche as well. That's why she is the favorite. I think, I mean, Carmouche, we all know what we get with her. She's very tough. She's experienced, like I just mentioned. She has outstanding wrestling, good power. Her stand-up game's okay, but it's really not kind of towards the top tier of the women's bantamweight division. And Shukagian is definitely the better striker. She's a little bit longer in this matchup as well, so she'll be able to utilize her reach well. She's the more well-rounded mixed martial artist. I think she has a fantastic ground game to go along with it. Even if you put her on her back, which she does have pretty decent takedowns, she usually causes the opponent to have fits, really. I mean, you can't control her that well. She usually scrambles up out of bad positions well. And, of course, she has, again, submission game to go along with it. So Shukagian is a very well-rounded fighter. I think Carmouche, even though she does have a well-rounded skill set, I don't think she is as good on the ground. And, again, on the feet purely, she's not as good of a striker either. So Carmouche has the wrestling advantage in this fight. She's going to need to use it and kind of just kind of lay and pray for three rounds to get the W here. I think Shukagian's going to make it very difficult. I think she's going to be able to sprawl brawl, outpoint Carmouche along the way. It almost reminds me back to when Alexis Davis fought Carmouche. I think we're going to see a kind of a similar fight, similar result. So I do believe Shukagian is going to get her second win. It's going to be an impressive one over Carmouche in this spot. So I have to pick her to win.
Yeah, I like Chukagian's chances as well. The main thing here is Liz Carmouche is not a good striker, like, at all. If you watched her fight against Alexis Davis, I mean, it was embarrassingly bad, just getting popped in the face with jabs and occasional kicks. Now, Carmouche somehow won the fight against Lauren Murphy, but in my opinion, Murphy easily won that fight, and it was a stand-up fight. So, for the most part, Murphy outstruck her. And if you go back and watch Shukagian's UFC debut against Lauren Murphy, what happened? Shukagian stood up and just absolutely dominated the stand-up in rounds 1 and 3 against Lauren Murphy. Like, Shukagian is the better striker than Liz Carmouche by a mile. So what this fight is going to boil down to is whether or not Liz Carmouche can get takedowns and get top position. Now, obviously, Carmouche is very physically strong. She has a pretty solid overall ground game. And if she can put Shukagian on her back and keep her there, that's her path to victory. Maybe if she can push her against the fence, do some damage in the clinch, stuff like that. You know, just ugly this fight up a little bit. But if Chookagian can keep her distance and utilize her height and reach like she did in her fight against Lauren Murphy, then the path to victory is not very strong for Carmouche. She just is not a very explosive type of grappler and wrestler. She's just more a physically strong person that can potentially overpower Chookagian if she can get her hands on her. And if Chookagian fights smart and keeps her distance, she has a big reach advantage with her hands and her feet. So I can just see her kicking and punching her way to victory here. And even if Carmouche does get a takedown, I think Chookagian's ground game is okay enough that she doesn't take a ton of damage. So as long as Carmouche doesn't get on top of her for 2 out of 3 rounds, then this is Chookagian's fight to lose, so I'm going to pick her. Now moving on to the headlining bout of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a lightweight contest between veterans Jim Miller, who is 27-8 with one no contest, and Tiago Alves, who is 26-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I up on Alves -175, the comeback on Miller at +135. Right now, over 5 times, it is currently Alves -160. The comeback on Miller is at +140. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action on this fight as well. Man, this should be a good fight. I mean, it's interesting to see Alves all the way down to lightweight, for one. I mean, we're going to have to really see how he weighs in and what he looks like, how comfortable he is with everything, because obviously he had a difficult time back in the day not too long ago making welterweight. So all the way dropping down to 155 is definitely a head-scratcher, but we'll see if he pulls it off. And if he does, how much is he going to really have left in the tank, and how good is he going to look? I mean, there's a lot of questions surrounding Alves in this fight. But if he's the Alves we are used to seeing, then he should have a decent advantage on the feet against Miller, and he should have the takedown defense to probably keep it upright as well. So that does definitely give him the edge over Miller. Now, Miller's stand-up has always been a little bit underrated. I mean, he definitely has a little bit underrated power. He mixes things up well. He has pretty good boxing as well. He's aggressive enough. He's got good timing and good counterattacks. I mean, there's a lot of things to like about Jim Miller. Now, of course, we haven't seen the best of Miller recently either. I know he's been battling kind of Lyme disease off and on, and he finally – it looks like he's a little bit better as of late, because he has that under control with the medication and all that too. So that might have had an impact in his career the last couple of years. It's hard. So obviously it probably has. But that being said, I don't want to make any excuses for some of his lackluster performances. But this fight is a winnable fight for Miller as well. So really, it all comes down to who can implement their game plan. I mean, Miller, I think, will hang with Alves even on the feet. If he can mix in a takedown or two, he'll definitely be able to maybe steal a round or two. So I think this fight's going to be competitive, hit the scorecards if it does go to the cards, and be almost a split decision type of fight. At the same time, Miller definitely has a huge advantage over Alves as far as submission game goes. I mean, Miller, offensively especially, is legit on the ground. We all know that. He has got great chokes. He's got good fight IQ. He has the ability to finish the fight more so on the ground than even standing up. So if Miller's able to get Alves to the ground, I think it's going to be a wrap. He's going to win this fight, but that's going to be easier said than done. So again, I'm going to slightly lean towards Alves, because I think if he does come in to this fight looking like he normally does at welterweight, he probably does outpoint Miller. I don't know if he finishes Miller, but you never know. I mean, these guys have been around for so long that a knockout either way wouldn't be shocking at this point of their careers. But overall, I have to slightly side towards Alves, so that's going to be my pick.
The biggest factor for me in this fight is Tiago Alves dropping down to the lightweight division. I mean, this is a guy who for years had trouble making the welterweight limit. Like, it was a big deal when he got a title fight, because people were so concerned that he wasn't going to make the 170-pound limit. And then now, after working with Mike Dolce and everything, the guy's suddenly dropping down a weight class? That's ridiculous. It's just crazy. I know he's had a lot of injury problems. Maybe he lost some muscle mass, so it's not as crazy as I'm making it sound. But seriously, this is a guy that had trouble making 170. Now he's dropping 15 more pounds. So you do have to consider that. And I'm going to be paying extra special attention to Tiago Alves's weight cut, how he performs, how he looks on the scale, whether or not he makes weight. Those are the main things that are going to decide this fight for me, because on paper, Tiago Alves is just way better than Jim Miller. I mean, he has really good takedown defense. He is an excellent striker, some of the nastiest leg kicks in the division, good power in his hands. Now, Miller has progressed a little bit. Like, ever since he got diagnosed with Lyme disease and they figured out what was wrong with him, He definitely doesn't look like he's on as a decline as maybe we thought he was. Maybe the Lyme disease had a big factor into that. But Miller overall, well-rounded guy. Longtime veteran of the sport. Good boxing. Really good jiu-jitsu. His biggest issue is conditioning, honestly. He slows down in fights bad. And we've seen it, especially fights that are very high action intense. And we see him, against Pat Healy, where he gave up a late submission, against Michael Chiesa, where, he started really strong and then faded and gave up a submission. So there are definitely opportunities here for Thiago Alves. The main thing is Alves needs to keep this fight standing, utilize those kicks, because Miller is not going to like those. And if Alves can do some damage, keep that high pace, and keep a good defense, then this is Alves' fight to win. If he allows Miller to start utilizing some of his grappling, then Miller has a good shot, especially if Alves has a bad weight cut. So that's the main thing to pay attention to, but for now, I'm picking Thiago Alves. Now moving on to the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have Vicente Luque, who is 10-5-1, taking on Bilal Muhammad, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Muhammad -135, the comeback on Luque at -105. So virtually pick him with a very, very slight lean towards Muhammad. Right now, over 5 times, it is currently, let me double check here, Muhammad is coming in at -165. The comeback on Luque is at +125. Now, line margins will tighten up a little bit. This line was recently released, obviously. So you're looking at probably a market price about $1.45, $1.50 for Muhammad overall when it does tighten up a little bit. So has been two action coming in on this fight as well, but more so on Muhammad, obviously, because the line movement's a little bit more his way early on. This is a tough fight for Muhammad, honestly. He was supposed to face Lyman Good, which was also a difficult fight. I don't think that was a cakewalk either, but Luque coming in on short notice, replacing Good, taking this fight, I think it might be a more difficult task for him. I mean, Muhammad really needs to outstrike Luque to win this fight, possibly get some takedowns, but Luque's takedown defense is definitely pretty good. I know he's been taken down in the past before, obviously, but I think overall it's going to be a little bit harder for Muhammad to get him in that position to kind of grind out rounds with Luque. On the ground, obviously, Luque has a pretty slick submission game to go along with it. And then on the feet, Luque is aggressive. He's got really good striking. I mean, he's got a ton of power on the feet as well. I think he's actually the more effective power puncher in this spot of the two. I think he's got a better chin than Muhammad does as well. I think Muhammad's activity level can be a little bit higher, though, and he stays busy. And Muhammad is a warrior. I mean, I have much respect for Muhammad. I like to watch him fight because, I mean, he's always going to bring it. You know what you can expect from him. I mean, look at his fight against Jovan. That was just ridiculous. I mean, a lot of people would have folded under pressure. A lot of people would have been out not wanting to continue. He showed his toughness. He made it a fight. He came back and almost stole that fight. So that's the type of fighter Muhammad is, and that was his UFC debut. So since then, obviously, against Montano, he had a pretty decent win in that spot as well. He's got confidence under him right now, a lot of momentum. So this is going to be a fight. I'm really thinking it's going to be a fairly competitive fight as well. I just think that stylistically, it's kind of a tough matchup for Muhammad. So I'm actually going to side with Luque here, even though he's coming in on short notice. He stays in pretty decent shape. I mean, he's a young gun. He's only 25 years old. Muhammad's only 28. So both these guys have a long, bright future ahead of them, probably in the sport, especially in the UFC, if they could keep the ball rolling here. But I do think that Muhammad is going to get derailed here a little bit, and Luque is going to win the fight. So it's hard not to pick Luque again. I think he does have the power edge on the feet. I think he could be the more effective striker there. He's got that sneaky submission game in his back pocket as well, and I think he's got the takedown defense to probably keep it upright. So with all that being said, if there's going to be a finish in this fight, I think it's Luque going to be the one to do it. And I think if it hits the scorecards, it will be competitive, but I think Luque can win on the scorecards as well. So much respect to Muhammad, but I don't think he's going to win this fight.
Muhammad is definitely a talented, well-rounded fighter, pushes a high pace, has excellent conditioning, has a good volume of strikes, and he can mix in some takedowns. So those are all things that Luque should be worried about. But I just really think Luque is on another level at this point. You watch his fights. He has really good power. He has good diversity of his strikes. He has a pretty solid overall submission game. Not that I think he will submit Muhammad, but the potential is there if Muhammad leaves an opening. So I think that this fight is going to play out a lot similar to the Alan Joban fight, where Muhammad, yeah, he's going to be aggressive and push forward, but Liu Kang is probably going to be the one that lands the damaging blows and hurts Muhammad along the way. Liu Kang has excellent power, and if he connects, you saw Muhammad got dropped like 3 or 4 times in the Alan Joban fight, and Liu Kang is a bit of a similar style fighter, especially on the feet, where he is going to have a 3-inch reach advantage. So I really like Liu Kang here. The only thing that scares me, honestly, is the fact that Liu Kang is taking the fight on short notice, stepping in for Lyman Good. So if that is a factor, then maybe Liu Kang slows down in the third round and Muhammad takes it over. But even in that situation, Muhammad would probably need a finish, at least in thinking about this fight playing out in my head, because I see Liu Kang winning the first 2 rounds by landing the bigger strikes and doing more damage and potentially dropping Muhammad along the way. So I really like Vicente Luque as well. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Rafael Natal, who is 21-7-1, taking on Tim Boach, who is 19-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Natal, -170, the comeback on Boach at +130. Right now, looking over at 5 dimes, it is currently Natal -155, Boach is +135. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit. 2 action coming out of this fight, and it is a tough one to pick. I mean, the Boach bounced back recently with a pretty impressive win over the late Josh Simon. I mean, that was definitely a good fight to get him back on track. A much needed victory as well. I mean, he suffered 3 back-to-back-to-back losses. I mean, tough losses as well. I mean, he got choked out by Latis. He got knocked out by Henderson, of course, and then he got knocked out by Herman. So a lot of people, including myself, thought that we probably seen the best of Boach, but he did rebound well, like I said, against Simon, and he got an important win, and it makes you think that, okay, maybe he's got a little bit left in the tank. And the way he matches up with Natal, you never know. I mean, he does match up favorably against Natal. I mean, he has a lot of power. He's an aggressive fighter. Natal has a weak chin. I mean, we all know that. He's been clipped before. He's been dropped before. Boach has enough power to put him out. He's got the wrestling to probably make this fight interesting on the feet as well. Or if he decides to get a takedown or 2 along the way, it's going to be tough though. Natal's wrestling has always been underrated, and his ground game, of course, is better as far as his pure submission games over Boach. He definitely has that advantage there. And then I think he's the more diverse striker on the feet Natal is as well. So this is a tough fight because I think either one of these guys can clip each other, put each other out on the feet. The first person that kind of makes a mistake and is defensively flawed, which both of them have had their issues in the past with that, will probably get beat here. If it hits the scorecards, I think we're going to see another very competitive fight, almost a split decision type of fight as well. But I have a feeling this thing is not going to go to the cards. I think somebody is getting finished here. And I have to go with the better fighter. I think the more complete fighter out of the two is Natal. I think he can win on the ground. I think he can win on the feet as well. If his chin holds up, he probably does win this fight, even on if it does hit the scorecard. So even though Boach showed us a little bit of life again, I still think that Natal has been kind of – I think overall been the more impressive fighter as of late. I mean, you cannot take that away from him. I mean, even against Whitaker, a guy that has a tremendous amount of knockout power, he managed to at least survive and lose a decision to Whitaker too as well. So I think if he doesn't get clipped again, I'm going to say it, I think he probably wins this fight. So I got to lean slightly towards Natal, but it is a very difficult fight to pick.
I can definitely see why this fight would be difficult to pick. I mean, Natal is the more technical of the two fighters. I mean, Tim Boach will have an advantage, I would say, in maybe pure punching power and maybe physical strength. Wrestling's almost a wash. Jiu-jitsu's Natal. Technique, definitely Natal. I think pace, Natal. But then you look at some other things and, you know, defense, bit of a wash. Accuracy, a bit of a wash. I mean, these guys are evenly matched. Now, granted, Tim Boach has not had the greatest run as of late. I mean, he had a really tough stretch where they threw him in there against some of the top guys in the division, and he didn't perform very well. Dan Henderson, Talis Latis, Luke Rockhold, you know, those guys all just dominated him. But you do have to give Boach a little bit of credit. He didn't get, he didn't quit. He didn't give up. He didn't retire or anything. He came out and he just beat the brakes off of Josh Simon, the late Josh Simon, in his last fight. And I thought that was about as good as Tim Boach has looked. So what you need here is for Tim Boach to kind of go to what works. And what works for Tim Boach is a strong, aggressive, grappling style approach, maybe aggressively pushing forward on the feet, try to land a big shot. Now, Boach's chin isn't quite as good as it used to be, but I still think it's better than Natal's. Now, obviously, Natal has had a nice little run where he's gone out there and overperformed against some pretty tough opposition. I mean, he beat guys like Uriah Hall on the beat him on the feet, which was perhaps most surprising of all. So I think if Tim Boach wants to win this fight, he just needs to throw caution to the wind a little bit and just be really aggressive, force Natal to make a mistake. Because if he doesn't, then Natal is probably just going to jab him to death, keep distance, outwork him on the feet. And then if the fight goes to the floor, Natal probably has that jiu-jitsu edge and will make something happen. So I'm actually leaning Tim Boach. I think that he does throw caution to the wind here, especially, training in Maine with Marcus Davis. I think, he is starting to put some things together, and Natal maybe is underestimating him here. So I'm going to side with Tim Boach. I'm not crazy confident about it. This could be a fight that I change my mind on after weigh-ins, but for now, I'm siding with Tim Boach. Now, moving on to the lightweight division, we have Khabib Nurmagomedov, who is 23-0, taking on Michael Johnson, who is 18-10. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Nurmagomedov at minus 300, the comeback on Johnson at plus 220. Right now it's Nurmagomedov at minus 270, the comeback on Johnson is plus 230. So line basically staying the same again, tighten up a little bit as far as the margins go. And there is two-way action coming in on this fight as well. Now, as we get closer to fight time, there is going to be more parlays heading in towards Nurmagomedov for sure. And we're going to probably see some straight bets coming out of Johnson. So I think it should stay fairly ballparked to 3-1 and under a little bit. And it is going to be an interesting fight, to say the least, because we all know Khabib is one of these guys that can dominate almost every fight with his wrestling, with his takedown ability, just smothering people, just ragdolling people along the way. I mean, he's looked very impressive. Has a win, of course, over former champ RDA. I mean, I know RDA just recently lost to Ferguson, but that being said, I mean, that's a pretty impressive win, and the way he went about it as well. I mean, his resume is pretty impressive, what he's been able to accomplish, but he's been injury prone and we haven't been able to see as much of him recently as well. So that in the back of my head, that I don't like that for Khabib. I think he needs to definitely stay up back on track. It looks like he's trying to do that, to stay injury free, get back in there and kind of fight a couple times a year, getting that title picture. And with the win over Johnson, of course, I mean, that could definitely get him towards his ultimate goal of wearing that strap. And a lot of people believe that Khabib is the best lightweight in the world right now, so he should be wearing that strap here soon. But I don't know. I mean, he's got a tough fight over Michael Johnson for sure. Johnson stylistically is kind of a tough matchup for Khabib, because obviously Michael Johnson has a wrestling background that he can probably sprawl and brawl a little bit. And then obviously on the feet, Johnson is the better striker. He's got the power to put Khabib out. I mean, I think it's going to be a difficult fight if Nurmagomedov cannot get this fight to the ground and do what he does best and just kind of smother control or even possibly submit Johnson. Because if he takes his back in that scenario, I could possibly see a submission, even though we're not used to seeing a lot of that from Khabib either. But that being said, a tough fight. Like I said, I want to see if he can get this fight to the ground and if he can ragdoll him for three rounds and kind of lay and pray a little bit and get his way to a victory. But I think Johnson is going to be game. Obviously, he's been drilling the takedown defense more than ever. He knows exactly what the game plan is going to be here. So that's why I'm not very confident. I'm going to pick Khabib Nurmagomedov to get the W here over Johnson. It's just a pick. I might switch it at weigh-ins as well. I mean, that's how I'm kind of borderline going back and forth. And I know that sounds kind of crazy because he's a 300 favorite, or practically close to a 300 favorite at this point. But I do have a lot of respect for Michael Johnson. I think he's a dangerous opponent. I mean, he's got tons of power in his hands. He's got the accuracy, and he's got the wrestling to kind of sprawl and brawl and make life interesting for Khabib. So not a ton of confidence, but I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Khabib's way here. And I think he probably can do what he does best and get the fight to the floor and kind of squeak out a decision or maybe even a finish along the way. But again, not very confident. And make sure you guys check out MMAoddsbreaker.com for our staff picks, because that's going to be the final pick before the fights go live, of course, there as well. So if any changes, that's where we'll have them. But for right now, I am going to pick Khabib Nurmagomedov to win the fight.
Khabib Nurmagomedov is a guy that I've had listed at number one in the division for a while now, and he's taking on a serious opponent in Michael Johnson, who has really vaulted back up in the rankings after a big-time performance the last time out against Dustin Poirier, where he just completely dominated that fight and got a quick finish. Now, do I expect that to happen this time around? No. Khabib has a better chin. Khabib is very, very dangerous with his wrestling, so Johnson isn't going to be as loose in the stand-up. And there's a lot of things to consider here. I mean, number one is Michael Johnson's history against grapplers. It hasn't been the best. Dating back to his UFC debut in the Tough finale of, I believe, Tough Season 12, where he just got completely dominated and lost a decision. Now, he has improved drastically since then, but guys with a good ground game have, again, traditionally given him fits. So, I mean, you go back, he had Hayza Madadi on the ropes, was just crushing him, and ends up getting submitted. So, he had, what's his name? He had Miles Jury just out-wrestled him, stayed on top of him for three straight rounds, dominated him. Paul Sass was able to pick up a knee bar against him. So those are all fights where that was the prevailing theme. Now, since then, since that last loss to Madadi, 2013, he has not lost on the ground. So he's clearly put in a lot of effort to improve that part of his game. And I'm certain that defending takedowns, keeping Khabib off of him, was the number one priority of this training camp. So we'll see how much all that effort is going to be paying off here, because obviously he looked a lot better with avoiding going to the ground against people like Beneil Dariush, a fight that just about everybody assumed that Johnson was going to win, but the judges didn't. So I do think that Michael Johnson is a very live dog here. I mean, it's all about whether or not he can avoid the takedowns. And it's not exactly saying that's easy, because Khabib Nurmagomedov is one of the most aggressive wrestlers in the division. I mean, this guy just keeps coming at you and at you and at you like an Energizer bunny. But the other thing about him is he has had a significant history of major knee injuries over the past 2 years that has pretty much kept him out of the limelight. The only time we've seen him was when he came back and then had to face an injury replacement in Daryl Horcher that, yeah, he crushed him, got a second round TKO, but that was a guy that was barely bottom barrel UFC level. So, you know, we have a lot to learn about what Khabib is there. Is it the same Khabib that crushed Rafael Dos Anjos and won a dominant unanimous decision before Dos Anjos' run to the top of the division? Or is this going to be, you know, a Khabib that's maybe not ready to be taking on elite fighters in the division right now? So this is a fight where we're going to learn a lot. And part of me is really thinking that Michael Johnson has a good shot to pull this off. Khabib, yeah, he trains with a lot of elite fighters, but he hasn't been fighting them lately. And maybe after 2 years off, facing somebody with really good athletic ability and nasty power on the feet and a lot of really quick ability to get in there and land that shot without getting hit, like Michael Johnson, maybe he has the ability to make this interesting and pull this off. So believe it or not, I'm actually going to pick Michael Johnson to pull off this upset. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a featherweight matchup between Frankie Edgar, who is 19-5-1, and Jeremy Stevens, who is 25-12. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Edgar -350, the comeback on Stevens at +250. Right now, it looks like over five times it's -340 for Edgar. Stevens is +280. So again, another case where lines basically stayed as they are now, just a little bit tighter, and two action is coming in. Both these guys, obviously, at featherweight have been really good. I mean, Stevens, since dropping down, has looked like an excellent fighter. I mean, he's had his hiccups along the way, but I think, you know, compared to his lightweight, even though he had success there, I think featherweight was definitely the right move for him. I mean, his power carries with him very well, even at the lighter weight. He's got good takedown defense. He's just still that explosive athlete with a ton of power that is so dangerous. And again, in most cases has decent takedown defense, so he's able to sprawl brawl and knock people out. But against Frankie Edgar, we all know his credentials, his background. Again, former lightweight champion. Since dropping down to 145, he's had his fair share of success. He hasn't got that strap, unfortunately for him. That's his ultimate goal, of course, but he's definitely worthy of wearing a belt, even at 145 pounds. I know Jose Aldo, in his last fight, that didn't really work out so well for him, but outside of that, it seems like Edgar just has been rolling through everybody. And I think stylistically here, unless Edgar kind of hits that spot where the decline is real and all of a sudden he just starts looking old and on kind of a shell of himself, he's going to win this fight because he's just a better overall fighter. I mean, if he stands and bangs with Jeremy Stephens, it's definitely dangerous. Even though Edgar can handle himself, we know that he's been in there with good strikers in the past, with powerful strikers, and he's managed to even outstrike a lot of those guys as well. I mean, he's special. Frankie Edgar is just a special, talented mixed martial artist in all aspects of the game, mentally, physically, everything that he's accomplished. I mean, he's elite. He's one of the best all times, I think, MMA fighters in the UFC. I mean, that's how good this guy is. But that being said, it all catches up with you at some point. I don't think Edgar's hit that decline spot. But if he has, I mean, this is the type of fight that will definitely show it and maybe exploit a little bit. So Edgar, I think, is going to come up with a great game plan. He's going to probably get this fight to the floor. And once on the ground, Edgar does have a huge advantage over Stevens. He should be able to control him a little bit. His submission game is highly underrated as well. And so he has – even though Stevens' sub-defense has gotten better, I wouldn't be totally shocked if on the ground Edgar is able to have some success there as well. So it's Edgar's fight to win or lose. I think he can be all right on the feet with Stevens, although he doesn't really want to play that game too long because Stevens can just – all it takes is one shot from him to put you out. So I think his game plan is going to come in, be solid. He's going to get the fight to the ground and kind of basically outpoint Stevens to get the dodge. So at the current price, though, as far as line goes, I mean, over 3.5 to 1 or 3 to 1, it is kind of steep. So I wouldn't recommend going out there and just betting the house on Frankie Edgar, because Stevens is the type of guy that could definitely take all your money with one punch. So careful out there at the current odds, but I still cannot go against a guy like Frankie Edgar. I think he is one of the best all time and hard to go against him. So I'm picking him to win.
Obviously, Frankie didn't have his best night at UFC 100 against Jose Aldo, where he pretty much just got dominated for 5 rounds. But this isn't Jose Aldo that he's fighting. Yes, Jeremy Stephens is very dangerous still. He has a lot of power. He pushes a high pace, but you know what? He isn't as active as Edgar. He doesn't have the defense of Edgar. He doesn't have the wrestling of Edgar. He's just not the same fighter. The only thing that Stephens has an advantage over Edgar with is, I would say, pure knockout ability and maybe a little bit of chin strength. Now, both guys have definitely been rocked in the past. So, I mean, if they're trading blow for blow, then maybe Edgar goes down. But I don't see Edgar getting into a firefight with Jeremy Stephens. For the most part, what Edgar does is he works his angles. He uses footwork. He finds openings. He darts in and then comes out at another angle after he lands his strikes. He doesn't stay in the pocket very long. He gets hit every once in a while. He starts bleeding, but he usually wins his fights. And recently, he's really started to implement his wrestling more in fights. We've seen it in the Cub Swanson fight. We've seen it repeatedly, and it's been very effective. Now that he's fighting guys similar to his own size, he's been able to utilize that wrestling. So I do really think that Frankie Edgar is on another level than Jeremy Stephens at this point. And barring a wild haymaker that clips Edgar, which could happen, Jeremy Stephens has done that throughout his career in fights that he was losing. But barring that, I have to think that Frankie Edgar rolls here probably by decision. Now, kicking off the main card on pay-per-view, we have former champion Miesha Tate in the women's bantamweight division, who is 18-6, taking on Raquel Pennington, who is 8-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Tate, minus 245, the comeback on Pennington at plus 175. And right now it's Tate minus 170, the comeback on Pennington at plus 150. So decent little drop here. Pennington getting the love and support. I mean, right now looking at five dimes, only about a 25-cent drop on the dog, but still line margins have tightened up a little bit, and Tate is only minus 170 now. So a little surprised because Tate, I figured, would get a little bit more respect, but Pennington's performances as of late have been nothing but impressive, even though obviously Misha Tate was recently the title holder and she's had some pretty impressive performances of her own. Still though, I think Pennington has definitely closed the gap and she's finally getting some of the respect she deserves. I mean, she was just basically above 500 not too long ago. I mean, now, right now, I believe her current record is 8-5. So she's barely above 500, but throw the records out the window because obviously Pennington is a legit, legit contender at 135 pounds. I mean, look at her fights with Holly Holm, for example. That was a war. I mean, she beat Kohea in a very impressive, but pretty competitive matchup there as well. So I think Pennington has proved time and time again that she's getting better. She's got decent enough takedown defense that her striking ends up showing well for her because that's what she's able to do. Usually she's able to outstrike most of her opponents. She does have a little bit of pop in her punches as well. And again, her takedown defense, and if she is on the ground, she's not too bad on the ground either. So she's becoming a very well-rounded fighter. She's putting in a lot of work and she's closed the gap on a fighter like Misha Tate significantly. That's why this fight will be competitive. And Misha Tate has improved. She's gotten better as well. Even her stand-up has. I mean, we all have known Misha Tate to be kind of this grinding type of fighter where she gets the takedowns, is able to smother people on the ground and kind of control people that way and get the nods as she normally does. But Tate has definitely shown us that she's been working hard on her striking. She packs a punch. She has a little bit of power. That's evident recently as well. So she's no slouch on the feet now against a pure striker. Unfortunately for her, like Nunes, somebody that can really bang, has a ton of power. Obviously we see how that kind of worked out for her. Not so well. I think Pennington, even though she doesn't have the Nunes type of power, Pennington can accumulate some damage along the way if Tate is not able to get her to the ground and hold her to the ground either. So this is not an easy fight. I can understand the early dog action coming in on Pennington. It's probably the smarter side of the two. It is hard to bet Misha Tate, even especially coming off that loss to Nunes. I mean, mentally, she seems to be okay. She seems to be recovered well, but still, we don't know how she's going to be after a fight like that. I mean, the ups and downs of her career, especially as of late. There's a lot of mental stuff that goes into it. Pennington is kind of on the rise. It is definitely a difficult fight. So that's why I say it's probably a dog or pass situation. Tough to bet Tate here overall. I am going to – I guess I've kind of been going back and forth on this fight. I almost want to pick Pennington straight out. I think she could beat Tate. But at the same time, if Tate is able to get her down, she'll probably be able to hold her down and control her long enough to steal the decision. So I'm slightly going to lean a little bit more towards Misha Tate to get the W here. But again, it's not a confident pick. I mean, this card from top to bottom is stacked. We all know that. I mean, they put this card together for a reason. It should be a phenomenal card. And there's a lot of close coin flip type of fights, and this is another one. So going back and forth on it, but I'm going to slightly lean towards Misha Tate to win this fight.
Yeah, I'm not insanely confident about Misha Tate here either. She went out there and tried to stand and trade with Amanda Nunes in the first round, where Nunes is the most dangerous, instead of, you know, just selling out to get the takedown, and she got clipped, she got dropped, she couldn't recover, and then eventually she got submitted. So she definitely needs to utilize her wrestling. I mean, her nickname was Takedown for the majority of her career, and she needs to go back to that. The wrestling is her bread and butter. Standing, the ability to strike is important, but not when you're facing strikers that are way better than you. Look at the Holly Holm fight. Yeah, the stand-up allowed her to not get, you know, destroyed and knocked out, but she still lost every single round that she didn't get a takedown. She needed a desperation takedown and a finish in the fifth round to win that fight and win the title, and she got it. That's what she needs against Raquel Pennington. Now, obviously, Pennington isn't as dangerous as Nunes or Holm, like in terms of power and ability to put Misha Tate out. So maybe Misha Tate will screw around on the feet a little bit more in this fight too, but she really needs to go and get that takedown. She needs to put Pennington on her back, keep her there. I mean, when Misha Tate's wrestling is on, she is on fire. I mean, this is a person that out-wrestled and out-grappled an Olympic silver medal wrestler, so in Sarah McMahon. So if Misha Tate can put Raquel Pennington on her back, then this fight is going to be easy for her. If she screws around on the feet again, then she's going to be in trouble. I know that she wants to pick her spots and not telegraph the takedowns, maybe, you know, walk face first into a knee or something, but I just don't think she has the chin or the overall striking ability to hang with most of the top women in the bantamweight division. And Raquel Pennington is on a roll right now. So if Misha Tate does not get this fight to the floor, this could be a serious upset brewing. But overall, I do think she does get the takedowns. She does have that wrestling ability, and especially once she does get somebody down, she's very good at keeping them there. So I'm going to side with Misha Tate. I'm not crazy confident because, again, Raquel Pennington could get win a decision if this fight stays standing. But right now I'm picking Misha Tate. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Kelvin Gastelum, who is 13-2, taking on Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is 31-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I open Cerrone -175. The comeback on Gastelum at +135. Right now, over five dimes is -155. The comeback still on Gastelum at +135. So line margins have tightened up again. Two reaction coming in this fight again. A lot of split opinions out there, but obviously Cerrone coming in the favorite for a reason. Man, have I been kind of wrong about him. I really thought that Cerrone, especially against Story in his last fight, would be, I guess, not as strong or not as sharp at welterweight. I mean, let's face it. He's been one of the best lightweights in from the WEC days into the UFC. He's been one of the best lightweights all the way up. I mean, short of the title, really, he's been right in the mix and one of the best elite fighters because of his all-around game, really. I mean, the guy has outstanding striking. He puts people away on the feet. He also has outstanding submission game to go along with decent wrestling. So Cerrone is a total package. I thought that moving up in class at welterweight, I mean, that's a loaded division as well. He would struggle. Now, a lot of people thought he was struggling against Cote. I did not. I thought he'd beat Cote, and he did. I was one, though, that thought he would struggle severely against a guy like Rick Story, and man, was I wrong. He looked great against Rick Story. So, to my surprise, I mean, Cerrone looks great at welterweight, a lot better than I thought he would, a lot better than most of us thought he would probably out there. Gaslam's another tough test, though. I mean, he's another talented welterweight that's big, powerful. Cerrone is going to have the overall skill edge because, again, I think Cerrone is the better overall striker, the more diverse striker. Cerrone's definitely the more dangerous submission fighter on the ground as well. The wrestling is going to be interesting here, though, because Gastelum definitely has some pretty solid wrestling, but we've seen even at welterweight, Cerrone's wrestling has been on par. It's been really good. So it's going to be interesting to see who it really fends off the other person, because both these guys, I think, are capable of getting top position throughout this fight. I think Gastelum, if he plays his cards right, can end up on top of Cerrone. He's got to be careful if he does get top position, obviously, because Cerrone is so dangerous from his guard. But I think Cerrone might even get a takedown or two on Gastelum. I mean, if Gastelum has been taken down in the past, I wouldn't be surprised at all the way Cerrone's wrestling has looked at welterweight if he does get a takedown. So a lot of factors into this fight that we're really not going to know how it plays out until they get in there. Now, also one wild card is that Gastelum has a ton of power and Cerrone has been hurt in the past as well. So I think Cerrone has a very tough chin, but to the body is where you need to go against him. Gastelum is a pretty smart guy. I'm sure he's going to come up with a good game plan. And again, with the power that he punches, I wouldn't count him exactly out on the feet either. So I want to almost lean towards Gastelum here, but man, I got to learn my lesson and how Cerrone has looked at welterweight. I mean, it's hard not to go his way. I have to go Cerrone's way. Now this, of course, I'm going to pick him this time and Gastelum probably pulls off the upset. That's the way life works at times. But that being said, I mean, until I see Cerrone look a little bit more human at welterweight, it's hard to pick against the guy. I mean, even though it's a guy like Gastelum that could definitely give him all he can handle, I still have to lean a little bit more towards Cerrone because he is the better overall fighter. And I mean, the momentum he has right now is pretty outstanding. So I think Cerrone kind of keeps the ball rolling here.
If Donald Cerrone had not performed the way he had against Rick Story, then maybe I'm not as confident in him in this fight as I am, but he looked like a new man in that fight. Rick Story just was not able to get his wrestling game going. He wasn't able to take Cerrone down. He wasn't able to pressure him. He wasn't able to force Cerrone into making mistakes. And Cerrone punished him and then finished him. Now, obviously, as Nick mentioned, Cerrone's weakness historically has been to the body. But you know what? I can't remember Kelvin Gastelum ever having a lot of success hitting fighters to the body. Yeah. For the most part, he, you know, goes to the head just like everybody else. So I'm sure he could make the adjustment, but that's not something that you learn overnight either. So, I'm not nearly as concerned about the body shots from Gastelum. I mean, you look at the people that hit Cerrone to the body and put him away. It was Anthony Pettis, who has one of the nastiest body kicks on the planet, and Rafael Dos Anjos, who has just brutal body punches. So, Kelvin Gastelum, he's going to have to show me that he can do it. And I'm not quite convinced that he can. Now, obviously, Gastelum is extremely talented, high motor guy. He pushes a high pace. He has improving stand-up skills, very solid overall wrestling skills. So if he can get a hold of Cerrone and throw him around a little bit, then that'd be great for him. But how many times have we said it now that Cerrone's going to be overpowered by people? And it just hasn't happened. Even Patrick Cote dropping down from the middleweight division couldn't do it. So I think Donald Cerrone definitely is there's definitely a really good reason to pick him here. I mean, he is by far the more technical striker. He has brutal leg and body and head kicks. His boxing is on point. If he is able to control distance well, I think he can give Gastelum a serious run for his money. Now, on the ground, yeah, Gastelum should have the wrestling edge, but Donald Cerrone's jiu-jitsu game is so nasty. I mean, Miles Jury was so intimidated by it that he dropped down a weight class. Anyway, that was a kid that had been in there against some really talented ground fighters before. And I mean, the second he shot in for a takedown, Cerrone had him in an omoplata and was twisting him into knots. So don't just assume that if Kelvin Gastelum can get some takedowns and make things interesting, that that's the end of the round. I think Donald Cerrone can sweep. He can reverse things. He could submit Gastelum. He has a good triangle choke. So it's not the end once this fight hits the floor either, despite Gastelum probably having a bit of a strength and wrestling edge. So I think, due to Cerrone's big advantage on the feet and power advantage and just the run that he's been on, despite the fact that Gastelum did just beat Johnny Hendricks, I think Donald Cerrone pulls this one out. So my pick is going to be Cerrone. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Chris Weidman, who is 13-1, taking on Yoel Romero, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Weidman minus 190, the comeback, and Romero plus 150. Right now, line margins have tightened up a little bit, but it's still around the same price. Weidman is minus 175. Romero is plus 155 as well. So two-way action coming into this fight. Man, what a difficult fight. I mean, there's a lot of circumstances surrounding both these guys. Both of them have been out for a little while. Of course, Weidman's had his neck surgery. Romero had his issues with USADA. Looks like everything's kind of straightened out. Both these guys are ready to go. And what an exciting fight. I mean, both these guys are definitely top-tier middleweights and championship level middleweights. I mean, obviously Chris Weidman being the former champ, he already wore that strap, and a lot of people believe that he's going to wear that strap again. We'll see how he performs against a very dangerous guy in Romero. I mean, Romero is the type of fighter that time and time again, I mean, he's been more impressive. I mean, he's been putting in the work again. I thought the guy had terrible cardio, a suspect chin, and he's kind of proved me wrong a little bit there. I mean, he has toughness. His cardio has improved. Not that he's got an awesome gas tank now, but still, I mean, he's got the toughness to definitely go three rounds, or, you know, maybe a little bit deeper if he needed to. Obviously, this is only a three-round fight here in the spot against Romero, but he can go three rounds, and he can be effective for three rounds as well, even though he might slow down a little bit. Now, Weidman hasn't exactly looked his best either. I mean, I know his fight against Rockhold was so wild. I mean, that was a crazy good fight, you know, as long as it lasted, obviously, there. But, you know, he did tend to slow down. Obviously, it was the impact, the whole fight, the way everything played out. I mean, it was such an exhausting type of fight. But he did look a little human in that fight, obviously. I mean, a little bit more and not as impressive as we would think at times, even again against a very solid competitor like Luke Rockhold. So I think that, you know, we have seen a little bit of weakness in Weidman's game. And I have also seen it even against Vitor Belfort in his fight. I mean, obviously he was very impressive in that fight, and he got the W early on in that fight as well, as he should. But I mean, Vitor early pressured him and flurried him, and he looked like Weidman was a little bit of trouble there as well. So I don't know. I mean, there's just something about Weidman that doesn't really sit well with me right now. And again, coming off the layoff, the surgery, I'm not exactly real confident in Weidman right now. Now, again, I could say a lot of the same things with Romero because he has been chin checked before. I mean, he's been rocked. He's been wobbled in fights before. Again, his cardio hasn't been always the best. Even with his wrestling background, he's actually been out wrestled in the octagon so far, which is a little bit of a surprise. But I think here the wrestling's going to probably neutralize each other out. I think both are going to probably attempt a takedown or two, but I think they're going to have trouble kind of keeping each other down. So the fight ultimately is going to play out on the feet. Weidman's going to have a little bit of reach. Weidman is an outstanding striker, heavy hands. So I wouldn't be surprised if Weidman lands something, clips Romero and puts him out. But I think Romero is a beast on the feet. He does pack a punch. I think he's going to flurry on Weidman. He's going to pick his spots, and it could be dangerous for Weidman as well. So both of these guys, I think, could definitely earn a finish here and are going to probably, you know, look to do that. I mean, they're definitely going to be wanting to get this fight under their belt, a huge impressive win for either guy, and getting that title mix and getting that next title shot probably more likely than anything. So I don't know. I mean, both these guys are going to be highly motivated. Of course, Weidman, this fight being in New York, I think he's going to be even more, if that's even possible, he's going to be up for it even more so. But all that being said, I don't know. I lean with Romero a little bit here. I think that Romero is just going to be a little bit too much. And from what we've seen from Weidman recently, I don't think he's going to be able to withstand that kind of pressure. Once Romero gets Weidman hurt, or he gets him kind of backing up and covering up, like sort of like he did against Vitor, I think Romero's the type of fighter that'll finish him. So I'm going to lean a little bit with the dog here. I think Romero can come into this fight with a good game plan if he paces himself a little bit as well. I think he can find his spots, land a little bit more accurately than Weidman can. And with that kind of power, I think he can make life miserable for Weidman. So again, another tough spot, another tough pick. But I think I'm going to go with the dog Romero to win this fight.
Really, there's only one factor that's making me nervous about Chris Weidman, and that's the neck surgery that he had. I mean, he was supposed to face Luke Rockhold in an immediate rematch, and that got tossed because he injured his neck, and that's serious. I mean, they went in there in his neck and were fiddling around. I mean, that limits mobility, that limits explosiveness, that could take away some of his ability to get easy takedowns. It could affect conditioning because he wasn't able to be active. I mean, there's a lot of things that I'm really concerned about. I mean, neck surgery is serious business. I mean, look at Tito Ortiz, how many times he's had to have plates fused and all that stuff, and what that did to him as a fighter. So, you know, Chris Weidman, I'm definitely concerned here. Now, obviously, Weidman is really talented. When he's healthy, he has explosive takedowns, great top position. He's very good on the feet, really good pressure. I mean, the guy was able to, for the most part, outstrike Lyoto Machida because he just got in his face for five rounds. He can, for the most part, not get tired. Now, obviously, he did slow down in the Rockhold fight, especially once he was on his back and took a lot of damage. So that is something to think about, because you never really saw Chris Weidman on his back very often. And when Rockhold was on top of him, he beat the living daylights out of him. And Weidman is facing somebody with elite wrestling ability that might be able to get on top of him and do some damage, because Weidman isn't that impressive off of his back. So if Romero can get on top and land some ground and pound, this fight gets interesting in a hurry. But overall, I mean, Yoel Romero, he is an elite athlete. He has a lot of power. He mixes up his strikes a little bit better than Weidman. He can do a few more unorthodox things, like that spinning back fist that dropped Jacare. He's landed insane flying knees in fights, crazy head kicks. I mean, the guy's definitely full of surprises. But for the most part, barring just the occasional wild, crazy stuff, he's not the most active fighter. And I think Chris Weidman can just outwork him a little bit here. And another thing you do have to consider, I mean, yeah, he's coming off of that split decision win over Jacare, but he shouldn't have won that fight. He landed one good strike in the first round, nearly finished Jacare, and then he clearly lost the next two. So at best, that should have been a draw, if not a win for Jacare, if you don't give him a 10-8 in the first round. So I just don't see it. I don't think that Yoel Romero is on Chris Weidman's level. The only thing that's keeping me from thinking this is a blowout is the fact that Weidman had the neck surgery, and I just don't know how that's going to affect him inside the octagon in regards to conditioning, strength, mobility, movement, reflexes, you name it. A lot of things could be affected, especially majorly negatively. So I'm picking Weidman, but I'm definitely a little cautious here because Yoel Romero is definitely a very dangerous fighter, and he's beaten some really good dudes in his UFC career already. So I'm picking Romero, but very carefully. Now, moving on, we have three straight title fights to triple headline this card. The first one will be the women's strawweight division as champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who is 12-0, takes on Karolina Kowalkiewicz, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open your Jędrzejczyk -355 and Kowalkiewicz at +265. Right now it's your Jędrzejczyk actually -410. Kowalkiewicz is at +330. So a little bit more action coming in on Joanna's direction. I understand. I mean, she's looked phenomenal. Her fights with Gadella have been nothing but superb. I mean, as MMA fans, how could you not love the wars those two ladies have showed us? I mean, really good. And Jędrzejczyk has been tested now by somebody like Gadella. You know, she took over in the championship rounds, or, you know, before that when Gadella started slowing down a little bit. Gadella was doing very well in that fight, but she showed us that she is the better fighter in most cases because she does have the stamina, does have the cardio, does have overall pretty decent takedown defense. And again, Gadella is a different matchup for her, and that was a little bit more of a struggle. But overall, she's hard to take down, hard to control, and she could outstrike you to the point where, I mean, her striking is a work of art. I mean, her movement, her accuracy, I mean, her length on the feet over most fighters as well in the division, and just how she uses her tools is just more than impressive. And she could keep up that pace for five rounds. So she's definitely a tough out. But if anybody can match her in a lot of that, it's a lady like Kowalkiewicz. I mean, Karolina has been nothing but impressive so far in her UFC career. She's fought decent competition and come out on top. And she's looked good, great in those fights. And I think she actually looks better fight by fight. And what I'm impressed with the most is her ability to keep a high pace, her ability to have smart fight IQ and be able to steal rounds. I mean, I think this is the type of fight that if anybody could go five rounds with Joanna, it's a girl like Karolina. I think this is going to be a very competitive back and forth fight. Obviously, you got to figure, you got to favor Joanna's striking overall. I think it's obviously a little bit better. She's going to be the more accurate striker, the more dangerous striker. But Kowalkiewicz, I mean, Karolina is going to be the one putting on some serious pressure as well, probably trying to get a takedown or two along the way. I don't know how much success she's really going to have in that area. But again, Gadella, if she follows that game plan, even though she doesn't have the wrestling to get the fight to the ground like that, I mean, she could do some similar things in that fight and make life a little bit more miserable for Joanna on this spot as well. So I do think that this is a very title-worthy fight. I mean, a lot of people might not even want to give Karolina the title shot or think that she's deserving to get it or whatnot, but I do think that she's going to put on a heck of a fight, a heck of a performance, and a lot of people are going to be kind of scratching their heads here thinking, man, that was a pretty close fight. And if it does hit the scorecards, a lot of good people are going to be probably sweating, especially if you lay that juice. This is another spot that I would actually back off and not go crazy here. I know Joanna has looked nothing but spectacular in most of her performances, and a lot of people were kind of thinking that this girl is not going to lose in this weight class. But the truth is, this is a dangerous fight because this is the type of fight that can hit the scorecards. We know the state of MMA judging, and if it's anything but competitive or close to competitive, you just never know which way it's going to go. So I do believe that we're going to see one of those fights that's going to go kind of back and forth. I do give the slight edge to Joanna, and I'm going to pick her to win this fight. But man, I mean, I think Karolina is definitely going to be worthy of looking at as possibly a live dog. I mean, it's a dog or pass situation for sure, despite the champion being so dominant, and I'm expecting a fun fight. So I'm looking forward to watching this fight. This is probably one of the fights on this card that's loaded that I'm looking forward to the most because you know it's going to be action-packed. These ladies are going to bring it. They're going to put on a really good show for us all. So slight lean towards the champion, Joanna. I think, again, Karolina is going to put on a great show, and we should have a good fight.
I definitely expect this to be a very entertaining competitive fight, but it's one that I see Jędrzejczyk winning. First of all, Jędrzejczyk is so active and aggressive, and she does have a bit of a power edge on Kowalkiewicz. So I think that is the first thing that will factor in here. Number two, I don't think the ground game is going to be a big deal for either fighter, and that has kind of been what has had Jan Chacek in trouble. I mean, Claudia Gadelha had a bunch of takedowns early in their fight that, and she landed some big shots on the feet. So that definitely kept Jan Chacek on her heels in her last title defense. Kowalkiewicz isn't going to be a big threat with that. So for the most part, I expect this fight to stay standing, and then it's going to come down to who's better in the stand-up, and you have to side with Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Jędrzejczyk just, she fights long, even though she has the same reach as Kowalkiewicz. I expect her to be able to land heavy jabs, good combinations. Now, when Kowalkiewicz settles into a fight, she really starts unloading combinations as well. So that's why I expect this fight to be really fun. But in terms of defense, Kowalkiewicz's defense is not even close to as good as Jędrzejczyk's. Jędrzejczyk gets hit more than 11% less often than Kowalkiewicz, and that's against, you know, elite women in the strawweight division. So I think Kowalkiewicz is going to be in some trouble here. I mean, and don't forget, these girls fought before. Jędrzejczyk won, I believe, in an amateur fight while they were still on their way up in Poland. It might have been a Muay Thai fight, but I'm pretty sure it was an amateur MMA fight early in their careers. So that's something that's in the back of Kowalkiewicz's head too, the fact that Jędrzejczyk beat her. So I also am interested in the fact that Jędrzejczyk moved her training camp to American Top Team for this fight. So she's been training with some really top girls, Tisha Torres, Jessica. Jessica Aguilar. I mean, there's some really good female fighters in American Top Team. Maybe not quite on Kowalkiewicz's level, but I think that they definitely will help Jędrzejczyk round out her game a little bit more. So I expect the best Jędrzejczyk we've ever seen. And even though I think Karolina Kowalkiewicz is extremely talented and very dangerous, I just don't see how she wins this fight. I think Jędrzejczyk winds up just outstriking her over the course of five rounds, and that defense, I think something's going to add up. Maybe she'll close her eye and get a doctor stoppage, or maybe even get a knockout. Who knows? But I see Joanna Jędrzejczyk retaining her title. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have a championship fight between title holder Tyron Woodley, who is 16-3, and challenger Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
The champ opened as an underdog. I opened Thompson -150 to come back on Woodley at +120. Looks like it was a pretty good call out there. A lot of people were kind of surprised. A lot of the diehards were not, that Thompson was favored over Woodley. But right now, it's actually Woodley as a bigger dog. He's at +170. Thompson is as the bigger favorite at -200. So 2-1 favorite for Thompson here. Obviously, the early action did cause the line to kind of increase a little bit. And there is two-way action on this fight. Obviously, Woodley is going to get some love as a dog. I mean, we're going to receive big money really on both these guys as the fight gets closer, of course, as well. And both these guys definitely have the tools to give each other a lot of problems here and get the win. I know what scares me the most, obviously, I mean, I lean a little bit more towards Thompson in this fight. I think a lot of us do, especially those that know the sport well. Stylistically, it should be kind of a tough matchup. And we all seen kind of what Rory was able to do to Woodley. We expect Thompson to be able to do the same, if not better, to Woodley as well. But, you know, I mean, you can't really use that MMA math and to really tell or predict how a fight's going to go, because everything's a little bit different. We've seen Woodley have, I think, a superior level of confidence recently, especially after he knocked out Robbie Lawler like he did. I mean, that's going to elevate his confidence to a whole nother level. He wanted to get the big money fights. I don't think he was really trying to avoid Thompson, but that being said, you know, I mean, that wasn't his first choice. Now he's stuck with Thompson as well. I think he's got some extra motivation because a lot of people are counting him out. If you look at the betting odds, he knows that he's the underdog in this fight. He knows most people are picking Thompson. He's going to have that extra motivation. He feels disrespected in a lot of ways. So he's going to be dangerous. I mean, Woodley has that one punch knockout power again, as he proved against Robbie Lawler and a lot of other fighters throughout his career. He can end the fight with one big shot. He also has the wrestling credentials to take most people down, control them on the ground as well. For Thompson, it's going to be different, though. It's going to be tougher to take Thompson down with his movement, with his footwork, with his outstanding striking, with his counterattack, everything that Thompson brings to the table. It's not going to be easy for Woodley to take him down, control him like that. So that's why, again, Woodley is the favorite. He's the better overall striker. Again, more diverse striking game. he's able to end fights really with his hands or his feet. As the fight progresses, obviously it favors Thompson a little bit as well. I think he can kind of find his groove and work, utilize that movement, the footwork, and kind of accumulate some shots. If he doesn't end it with one shot against Woodley, he can accumulate some shots and possibly end it as the fight goes as well. So this is going to be a fun fight. I'm just thinking that we're all kind of looking past Woodley a little bit too much here. So that scares me a little bit, especially at the betting line. So this is another spot where at 2-1, I would not recommend a bet. Maybe closer to the opener, about $1.50, $1.60. There could be some value on Thompson, but where the spot is right now, I think with everybody just kind of counting Woodley out, thinking, all right, Thompson stylistically easy fight for him. I mean, that's how seriously a lot of people are thinking. I mean, Thompson's not going to have any problems in this fight. Woodley can change that with one or two punches, I'm telling you. So it is a dangerous fight. Would not lay the 2-1 against Woodley, but I do expect Thompson to win this fight. He is the better striker. I think he deserves this spot being here. He's improved a lot since his UFC debut as well. His cardio, I thought at one time, was definitely suspect. You could tell he's put the work in. His cardio has improved a little bit, but he is going to be tested against a guy like Woodley. So another fun fight, another title-worthy fight, but I think that we're going to hear Ann New in this spot, and Thompson's going to become the new UFC welterweight champion, and deservingly so. So I am going to lean toward Thompson, but just be careful out there with the betting line.
This fight reminds me a lot of the Robbie Lawler fight, where Tyron Woodley is the more powerful one-punch striker, the better overall pure wrestler, the very dangerous explosive finisher, and he's taking on somebody who has a little bit better overall technique, somebody that is, uses distance a little bit better, and somebody that has way better conditioning. And if Woodley can blitz Stephen Thompson and take him out in the first round or two, he will definitely win this fight. I mean, it's definitely doable. I mean, Thompson got beat up on the ground by Matt Brown. Granted, that was a while ago. Thompson got dropped or hurt by Jake Ellenberger, and Ellenberger's not as dangerous or as explosive as Woodley. So if Woodley can get in there, and before Thompson settles in, then Woodley will defend the title. That being said, I just really believe in Stephen Thompson here. I mean, this is a guy that is so extremely talented and so aware of space in the cage, so such amazing ability to control distance. And I mean, he faced somebody in Rory McDonald who is one of the best jabs in MMA, and Thompson shut him down. I mean, Rory McDonald made Tyron Woodley, he just embarrassed Tyron Woodley when they fought. Woodley just could not pull the trigger because McDonald was constantly beating him to the punch, keeping jabs in his face, just controlling the distance of that fight, and Woodley just looked lost. So if Thompson can keep a similar game plan to that, then he's going to be in tremendous shape. And don't forget, 5-round fight. Tyron Woodley has barely ever had the conditioning for a 3-round fight. The only time he's ever had a fight that went over 3 rounds, he got knocked out by Nate Marquardt. So, Stephen Thompson, he definitely benefits from dragging this fight out. He doesn't need to rush. He just needs to play it safe early on and avoid getting blitzed and put away because he knows, he has to know, that that is Tyron Woodley's best method to victory. So if Thompson can keep his distance, stay further away, then he's going to be in good shape, because if he can stay back, then any time that Woodley powers forward and charges him, it's going to be telegraphed. He's going to have plenty of time to get out of the way. Robbie Lawler wasn't quite able to do that because he's more of a guy that likes to get in there in the pocket and trade, just have exchanges, and then Lawler would just turn it up as the fight went on. But Thompson isn't like that. Thompson wants to utilize that distance, work his kicks, work his jab. So I think Thompson can neutralize some of Woodley's strengths here. And unless Woodley lands that big shot, then I think Thompson is going to become the new UFC welterweight champion. It's just all a matter of Thompson avoiding being put on his back and beat up on the ground, and Thompson avoiding getting rocked. And honestly, even if Thompson does get put on his back, I think that's bad for Tyron Woodley, because he's not exactly a powerhouse finisher on the ground. He can get takedowns, but those also take a lot of energy. And I think if Woodley's getting a lot of takedowns early in this fight, he's just going to get tired and then Thompson's going to take over. So I wouldn't even recommend that strategy if I'm Tyron Woodley. I just think he needs to connect with something nasty in Thompson's chin and put him away as quick as possible. Because the longer this fight goes, the better the odds of Stephen Thompson. So my pick is going to be Stephen Thompson. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a lightweight title fight between UFC lightweight champion Eddie Alvarez, who is 28-4, and UFC featherweight champion Conor McGregor, who is 20-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in McGregor, -125. The comeback on Alvarez at -105. Right now, over at Five Dimes, it is McGregor, -160. Comeback on Alvarez is +140. I'm not surprised. I mean, with the popularity McGregor has, I mean, he talks the talk, but he walks the walk. I mean, that's why everybody's kind of in love with him as far as his fighting style. It's just the way he goes about things, the way he just brought himself to the top of the MMA game. I mean, you got to give the guy a lot of respect. I mean, he's the guy that runs his mouth, but he typically backs it up. I mean, his performances against Diaz, both of them, I mean, have been pretty impressive. Even the fight that he lost, he was doing very well early on in that fight. And then in his last fight, of course, where he got the, you know, very tight victory, but he did deserve to get that nod. And, you know, he fought through a ton of adversity to get the nod as well. So McGregor has definitely made himself one of the best fighters in the UFC on the roster. I mean, obviously he's a featherweight champion for a reason. Look what he did to Jose Aldo. That was crazy. I still can't believe that, that fight played out like it did. And on top of it, I mean, he goes up to 170 and he's winning fights, even though it's against a lightweight. I understand that against Nate Diaz. He's still that type of fighter that he's up for any challenge. He's motivated. He's getting better fight by fight. And he is one of the best strikers ever in the history of MMA, and that's crazy to say, but at the same time, not so, because McGregor is an elite level striker. I mean, he's proved it time and time again. He has accuracy, he's got clean technique, and he's got a ton of power to go along with it, and he's got that killer instinct. So the guy is going to be obviously a surefire Hall of Famer, and he's going to go down as one of the best strikers ever in the game. But I keep saying striker because that's exactly what he is. Now, he's definitely rounding out his game. He's gotten better on the ground, and he knows that that's his weakness. He's not a dummy. He's going to be working on that. He's going to be working on that takedown defense. And I guess against most fighters right now, he's at the level probably where he's going to be above average. I mean, he's not a slouch on the ground. His takedown defense is not easy either to get by. So he's definitely made enough improvements where he's a well-rounded mixed martial artist, but he is more of a striker than anything else. Whereas Alvarez is a little bit of everything. I mean, the guy is a very complete mixed martial artist. He has the striking. He's got the knockout power. He's got good boxing. We've seen it throughout his career time and time again. That guy can typically knock out most people or outstrike most people as well. But obviously, he's got the wrestling to go along with it, and his jiu-jitsu game is phenomenal as well. So Alvarez is the more complete mixed martial artist. He knows his path to victory here is getting McGregor to the floor and probably submitting him. I mean, that's going to be the way to get this job done, because if you want to stand and bang with McGregor, I mean, that falls kind of right into his hands. And of course, we all know that Alvarez in the past has been rocked. He's been dropped before as well. Now, he does tend to recover a lot of times. I mean, he's the type of fighter that might get rocked, dropped down to a knee, and then just seems to pop back up and keep fighting a little bit. But with a guy like McGregor, you have to be careful, because McGregor has that kind of killer instinct where he'll put a few more punches on you and it's lights out. So Alvarez, I don't think he wants to stand and bang with McGregor a long time. He wants to get this fight to the ground. I mean, even though I think it'll be pretty competitive on the feet for a little while, as the fight plays out, McGregor will probably land and win the fight if it does play out on the feet. So I do think that Alvarez is going to come up with a smart game plan. They all know that he has to get him to the ground, possibly take his back, submit him that way. I think that's his easiest way to win this fight. He said time and time again, I know it's smack talk leading up to the fight to hype the fight up a little bit more, but Alvarez said, you're one of the easiest outs, so that's why you're here. Obviously, that's not exactly true, but I think his mentality is that way, where, look, I'm way better than this guy on the ground. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to do what I have to do. I'm going to take this guy down early on, and I'm going to be successful, and I'm going to finish him on the ground. Now, we've seen in the past, McGregor has been beat on the ground before. Even Chad Mendez, even though he lost that fight, he did have some success against McGregor by getting him to the floor. I think Alvarez is going to try to duplicate that game plan, but actually trump it and do much better and win the fight, obviously, as well. Now, Nate Diaz wasn't able to really get McGregor down in the second fight. So credit McGregor, his takedown defense did get better, but Nate Diaz is not on the level as far as wrestling goes than Eddie Alvarez. So Eddie Alvarez should have more success getting this fight to the ground. And again, I think his jiu-jitsu is underrated, and he'll probably finish McGregor on the ground if he's able to do so. So tough fight. I mean, I'm going to pick Eddie Alvarez. Until McGregor shows me that he can sprawl and brawl and knock these wrestlers out left and right, I just can't trust him enough in a stylistic matchup like this. I think Alvarez is the more complete fighter, and I think the ground game is where he can exploit McGregor, and I think he probably does that. So to me, again, until McGregor proves me wrong, which might be this fight. I mean, if he stuffs every takedown Alvarez throws at him and he knocks Alvarez out, I'll be sold. I mean, the guy is definitely talented. He deserves to be where he's at. Again, I'm going to respect McGregor, but styles make fights. And in my opinion, stylistically, this is a tough fight for McGregor, and Alvarez has a clear path to victory, and I think he's probably going to get it done. So I'm going to pick Eddie Alvarez to become, I guess, not the new champion. I mean, we all act like McGregor is a champion. Eddie Alvarez is actually the lightweight champion. Let's not forget that. So I shouldn't say the new champion, but he's going to successfully defend his lightweight title and keep that strap. So my pick is Alvarez, and probably by submission over McGregor.
What a fight. I mean, Conor McGregor, Eddie Alvarez, this is something people only dreamed of. You know, Eddie Alvarez, so good with his technical boxing on the feet. You saw that in the Dos Anjos fight where he was able to just connect with that one good shot that just started the waterfall of the end of the Rafael Dos Anjos title reign and just kept going and going. I mean, his killer instinct was phenomenal. He just would not stop going after Dos Anjos, got that, and then just put him away. So, that's something against Conor McGregor that we're going to need to see. I mean, Eddie Alvarez is going to have to be in kill or be kill mode in this fight if he wants to win. And I do appreciate that he's not getting suckered into the mind games. I mean, he's playing it smart. I mean, this is a tough kid from the mean streets of Philly, you know? So, Conor McGregor, on the other hand, as Nick mentioned, I mean, so technical with his power and his boxing. I mean, you saw it. Repeatedly, that left hand, if he can connect with it solidly, if he can set it up, it's just as dangerous a weapon as a Dan Henderson H-bomb, as a Roy Nelson overhand right. I mean, he can really pack some punch in that thing. So if Eddie Alvarez is not keeping that right hand up, if he allows Conor McGregor to land a clean, good left hook or a straight left, then Eddie Alvarez is going to be in trouble, because as we've seen repeatedly in Alvarez's career, he's the kind of guy that does get hurt in fights a lot. And then he usually fires back and comes back and wins them. But, you know, Conor McGregor is not the type of guy that you want to get hurt in a fight against. So he needs to be extremely, aggressive with his, footwork. He needs to be on point with his defense. And as Nick mentioned, the wrestling is huge here. Eddie Alvarez on his run to the title. I mean, he loses his UFC debut to Cerrone, but the next two fights were so important for him because, when he beat former Strikeforce champion Gilbert Melendez and then former UFC lightweight champion, Anthony Pettis, the biggest factor in those fights was the wrestling. Eddie Alvarez is a really good technical boxer, but you know what? He got outpunched by Anthony Pettis. He got outstruck by Gilbert Melendez, but he mixed in three takedowns against Melendez that helped him win the last two rounds to win that decision. And he mixed in six takedowns against Anthony Pettis to win that fight. So, Eddie Alvarez definitely needs to use that ground game against Conor McGregor. Now, I'm not saying that he has an elite finishing ability on the ground. I'm not saying Eddie Alvarez knows how to really beat somebody up on the canvas with ground and pound. I'm not saying he's going to submit McGregor, but if he can just get on top of him, wear him out a little bit, that's great for him, because Conor McGregor is so dangerous in those first two rounds with that just explosive knockout ability. And as you saw in the Nate Diaz fight, which was just an absolute thrilling back and forth war, McGregor slows down. He loses that explosion. Now, he's still dangerous, but he's not the same fighter. So if Eddie Alvarez can just close the distance in this fight, just make it ugly, especially in those first two rounds, take away McGregor's opportunities to really get in there and land that big shot, then Alvarez is going to be in a great position to win this fight, either by decision or maybe late stoppage. So five round fight definitely favors Eddie Alvarez. Now, if I'm McGregor, I keep my distance. I just keep working on that timing, and you just have to find those openings. Maybe connect with something huge as Alvarez comes in on a takedown. You just cannot overcommit on the stand-up, though, because if McGregor leaves himself exposed, Alvarez is going to be diving in for a takedown. And this isn't going to be like a Nate Diaz takedown, because Diaz isn't exactly an elite wrestler. I mean, Eddie Alvarez knows what he's doing. I mean, Chad Mendes, who has a bit of a similar build to Eddie Alvarez, was able to get Conor McGregor down to the ground repeatedly. So I do think that Alvarez gets those takedowns. It's just all about whether or not McGregor lands that brutal straight left beforehand. So I'm going to pick Eddie Alvarez. I'm not insanely confident because this is the third time now I've picked against Conor McGregor, and I have not been successful. I believe I am 0-4 in his last four fights in terms of picking McGregor to win or lose. But I'm picking Eddie Alvarez, not crazy confident about it, but I do think that he retains that UFC lightweight title. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 205. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free plays via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.